There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are in France. Which means Tubi is more popular than cigarettes for breakfast. It's more popular than considering iced coffee a total abomination. More popular than loving political revolutions. More popular than mère and mère somehow being different words. Tubi, it's more popular than being French. See you in there.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Statements and opinions by guests of Mysterious Radio are not to be considered as endorsed by sponsors or affiliated networks. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or other use of this podcast without the express written consent of Mysterious Radio is strictly prohibited.
Get ready for a night filled with conspiracies, strange places, the paranormal, UFOs, legends, and myths from around the world. With your hosts, K-Town, on Mysterious Radio.
All right, thank you for joining me tonight for another edition of Mysterious Radio. I'm your host, K-Town, and tonight we're going to be talking about UFOs over Pennsylvania with my special guest, John Ventry. You may have seen him on the series Hangar One, and you'll see John on there. He's one of the people that they talk to about these cases. Now, John has worked for MUFON himself for many years, and he's written books as well. One of his books is called Case for UFOs. The other one is called The Ufologist, and he has one called An Alternative History of Mankind. And the one we're talking to him about tonight, like I said, is UFOs over Pennsylvania. All of them are available for you on Amazon.com. All right, before we get started, John, why don't you take a moment to tell us about yourself and how you actually got started investigating UFO reports?
Yeah, I'm retired from UPS. I was their executive level state director of security, public affairs, crisis management for three states, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Virginia. So it was a pretty big job. And what happened was 96, I was doing a lot of traveling at work, and I decided I want to write a novel, a sci-fi action novel. So I started researching end time prophecy, and I ended up writing a book on kind of like the Mayan calendar, but it's, you know, it's just an action novel. It actually has an asteroid strike that takes place. But by doing that, I kept coming across other cultures talking about gaining knowledge from star people, people on flying shields, etc. And I said to myself, you know, I'm going to join. I'm going to look at the UFO phenomenon. And I said, well, I'll join MUFON because I remember watching that TV show Sightings. And on it, whenever they talked about UFOs, they'd interview a MUFON investigator. So I said, well, I'm going to join. So my start in this field was very, very different than anybody else because I was 41 when I joined MUFON. I knew nothing about UFOs. I had no interest in UFOs. You know, I was a Comic-Con, Horror-Con, sci-fi, you know, horror movie fan. So, yeah, and most of the other people in this field, they've either seen a UFO or they've, you know, they were into it as a kid or, you know, parents saw or something. I've never seen one. My parents, you know, they never saw it and they thought I was kind of ridiculous to be looking at this field. But I had a very, very different start than anyone else. So, you know, I joined MUFON in 98 and one of the things, though, is I always had a lot of paranormal activity. Strange stuff would happen and it would, and then nothing would happen for years. And so, really the way this whole thing went, you know, I started investigating end time prophecy, then moved into UFOs. And then 4 years ago started investigating, demonology because of some very serious, stuff that's happened in my house. So I kind of came full circle. I went from, you know, end time prophecy to UFOs to demonology, which is really religion, and took me kind of back to end time prophecy, which, was religion. So that's how I got into this. And I've written 8 books. You know, 4 are novels and 4 are factual, you know, as factual as you can be in a field that's not proven. You know, 2 books on UFOs, 2 on demonology, that I consider to be factual books. But a very, very different start than anyone else. But that's how I got started in all of this.
All right. Very good. I'm going to have you back on to talk about that specifically. But before we go on, was your paranormal experiences tied directly to your UFO investigations or what?
Well, you know, I kind of go back and forth because the paranormal stuff, I had some stuff happen as a young kind of teenager, young kid. Then nothing happened again until I was early 30s. But it when it ramped up 4 years ago, and it's uncanny. You know, I was doing a talk show in Pittsburgh on public television with another guy, Fred Saluga. And I remember he said to me, and we even joke about it now, I blame him. But, you know, he said to me, John, you got to look into the alien abduction. He says the alien abduction makes no sense. I mean, I'm telling you, it's not a month after I said, OK, I'm going to investigate this and I start looking into it, that I have an entity show up in my house. It's malevolent. But I really don't think it came from that, although the coincidence and the timing was right at that same time. I kind of think this was something that has followed me my whole life. I think it's a generational curse or sin. And I really think it has to do with family line and more than just looking into the UFO stuff. But I will tell you something very, very interesting is that I joined MUFON in 98. So I know nothing about UFOs. 99, I go to my first UFO conference, the MUFON Symposium in D.C. So, you know, I go to the event. I enjoyed it. I met everybody in the field. You know, I was, a field investigator at that time with MUFON. So I no sooner get home, and I remember it was 4th of July weekend. I get home, and I have an out-of-body experience where I'm floating above my house. I'm having these lucid dreams. And this is right after going to a UFO conference. And, you know, so I'm seeing these hybrid kids, 2 of them. There's like some sort of a hairy creature. And I'm dreaming this. These are lucid dreams. I didn't see it, you know. But there was something in the room with me. I couldn't sleep. This went on for like 4 nights. There was something in the house, something in the room with me. It was so malevolent, like the hair in my arms and my neck was standing up. I could not sleep. Every hour I was waking up all night, swinging my fist at the air like something was there. And, you know, and I'm saying to myself, is this an alien abduction because I went to this conference? I mean, I had an out-of-body experience where I was floating above the house. I could see the peak of the house. I could see my car in the driveway. And I'm saying, holy crap, did something happen? You know, did I get targeted at this conference? And it seems very, very strange that that happens after going to my first UFO conference. All my life, I went to horror cons, you know, sci-fi conventions, you know, that type of stuff. I was a Comic-Con person, and nothing ever happened. But I don't know what the relationship there is. I have kind of formed my own theories about the demonic And I think they prey on the UFO people. I think there's a lot of trickery in this whole field, a lot of deception, and a lot of cases that people tell you are alien abduction. When you actually read their books and their autobiographies, you're dealing with demonic infestation, not an alien abduction.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you next. So, because people are definitely seeing some kind of craft and being abducted by these beings. So you're saying that ultimately you think that aliens are in fact demonic in nature?
If I had to pick one thing, I really would pick that, to be honest with you. I think there's probably a multi thing going on here, where there should be life in space. I mean, there's enough stars out there. There absolutely should be. And, you know, and I wrote a book called The Case for UFOs that, you know, I think is the best evidence that something is going on and you know, UFO related. But, you know, there are just so many cases, though. Like I said, the abductions, when you read it, that's not an alien that's doing this. And it's a hard thing to get to, because I've talked to theologians and priests and people, and, you know, and I'll ask them, well, just how powerful is a fallen angel? How powerful is Satan? You know, and their answer usually is as powerful as God allows them to be. But, you know, that's not an answer, you know, because something is being seen, and it's been seen forever. You know, if you look at what's going on, Academy to the Stars, they're releasing some video footage from fighter pilots of something flying at an incredible speed, making right-hand turns. But it's not anything new. I mean, I've seen that stuff the whole 22 years I've been doing this, and it goes back to the, you know, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and even descriptions further back. So there is no doubt something is flying around. Something is unidentified, you know, but I tell people, and I used to be 100% staunch believer this is from space and it's extraterrestrial, but I say now, you know, because it flies, does that mean it came from out of space? You know, I mean, so if you see one under the water, does that mean it originated under the water? You know, I don't know. But, you know, my question really to the religious side is, can Satan materialize something and make you see a UFO? I know he can put it in your head, like, you know, an angel or a fallen angel can put a telepathic message in your brain and it's not really there. But could they actually materialize a craft to trick you? And I believe the answer is yes, I really do.
All right. So why do you think they are abducting people?
Yeah, well, you know, you look at it and, you know, they're trying to create hybrids. And that's what Dr. David Jacobs, Kathy Martin will say, and a host of abductees that they took, you know, ovum, they were implanted, they were pregnant for 2 months and then the fetus is gone. So, but that's the same thing that took place with the Nephilim, you know, 4,500 years ago, that they mated with females and they created hybrids, which were part fallen angel and part human. So now it's the same story, just with a different, you know, cover, a different clothing on, that it's a spacecraft and it's a gray alien and they're, you know, sometimes a reptilian, and that they're creating hybrids and these kids. And yeah, and that's what I saw in my lucid dreams in 1999 with these two hybrid kids. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was so real. I know it was a dream, but it was an altered state that, you know, I've always had Dobermans. My dog was floating in the air horizontally. There was this kid there poking the dog like he had never seen a dog before. And I'm yelling at this kid, stop poking the dog, because he's poking him real hard in the ribs. But the kid, he's like, you know, a 10, 11 year old. He's got no shirt on. The kid's got like gigantic forearms like Popeye. The bone is sticking out of the elbow. He's got big eyes and straggly hair. And then there's another kid just standing there observing, about the same age. He looked like a vampire, like Nosferatu, a very gaunt face, but he had that rat boy type face, the teeth and the nose and stuff, and his hair was slicked back. It was just a weird, weird dream. But right after attending a UFO conference. But to get back to your original question, so why would they be doing a hybrid program and all of that? And, you know, you really get back to the same religious stuff that they're trying to change our DNA so that we're no longer in the image of our creator. And this is, you know, and that's the reason why, if you believe the whole, you know, flood and the religious story that God destroyed, you know, the earth with the flood and only saved 8 humans, was because the DNA had become so corrupted with the DNA of these fallen angels that they had to be all wiped out. So they're doing it again, but pretending to be alien, but it's the same thing over again. It's amazing how when you look at the religious side, and I was not religious, you know, I went a little bit to church, took the kids to church. But, you know, once my wife filed for a divorce in 1992, I hadn't stepped in a church in 20 years until something showed up in my house in 2014. And I go to church twice a week now. I consider myself a reborn Christian. And, you know, and I think that was part of my journey, you know, to get me where I needed to be. But it seems to me that the abduction thing is to corrupt the DNA, to change the DNA. And you can even, you know, take it a step further. You know, really what I wanted, you know, like a conference or the MUFON symposium to do is let's talk about genetic engineering and transhumanism. Should humans alter DNA and change who you are? And is that the same as what the aliens are doing and the Nephilim did? And are we no longer in the image of our creator if our DNA now, you know, we have superhuman strength, you know, we can swim in you know, they can implant fish DNA so we could swim in cold water. They can splice spider DNA and our skin can repel bullets, you know, like silk, Kevlar. Should we do that? Are we still human if we do that? I think it's a huge philosophical question. And, you know, I don't think I want to be something other than a human. I really don't.
I know that you believe, John, that these aliens are demonic in nature, but has your view changed over the years, or have you always believed that this is what they are?
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt at 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
Now, the demon thing is just recent. Like I said, after a demon showed up in my house, I had a terrible 22-month encounter here. But no, originally, like I said, I didn't know much about the field. So, you know, it's funny how it transpired. They had just made me the Pennsylvania State Director in 2007, and in 2008, we had this huge wave of UFO activity across the state, and I ended up on a TV show, UFOs Over Earth, on the Discovery Channel. So I kind of got force-fed into it, you know, but the books I've read were, you know, UFO, pro-UFO books. So, of course, that's what I believed. And I started out, you know, like a virgin in this field. I didn't know anything. So I read the books that supported UFOs. And, you know, I wrote a book, The Case for UFOs. I think it's one of the best books out there supporting UFOs, that something is here. You know, I document everything. I put it in chronological order. You know, if you read that book, you 100% believe that there are UFOs. But it's written more as UFOs from space. you know, not UFOs from dimensions, not UFOs from the future, you know, not UFOs from maybe another species in the hollow earth or anything. But the book was meant to be UFOs from space. And I think I really supported that and proved that something is flying around. So, but I don't believe that now. You know, I want to believe that there's life in space. There should be life in space. And there are a lot of good cases, you know. So, I mean, you could punch holes in the demon thing, you know, and I do that myself with, you know, 1973, the wave across the country from Pascagoula, Mississippi, up the Mississippi River, across Pennsylvania. It was about 6 weeks. It ended up in New Hampshire. Absolute. You know, craft was seen, beings were seen. They were trying to get samples. They were grabbing women, pulling them into the craft. They were seen, you know, like grabbing dogs. They were seen taking soil samples. And I think it was October 17th of 73. There was the most alien abduction attempts of any date in history. And that absolutely seemed like a species from space showed up. They had 5-6 weeks to get in, get out, get all the samples they can get. And that's exactly what they were doing. So, you know, I would say, yeah, that seemed to me to be UFO. And the Travis Walton case, I mean, I've had him speak at the conferences here, I think 5 times. You know, he stayed over my house a few months ago to speak at the conference. We talked, we filmed an episode here in my living room. And he says, John, there's nothing paranormal about my case. He says it happened. It was physical. I was on the ship. The grays were real. The Nordics were real. This was all physical. It was never out of body. So, you know, I have to say that those absolutely seem to be real UFO cases, you know. But the distinction that I make is there are cases like Travis Walton that seem to be totally physical, and I believe them. He passed 5 polygraphs. But something changed around the late 80s, 1990. The alien abduction, when you read the books from the 60s and the 70s, they saw metallic craft. They saw beings in uniforms. They physically grabbed people and tried to take them onto their ships. But then around 1990, this thing became an altered state, an out-of-body experience. You know, you read the descriptions. Well, they saw a gray alien come out of the corner of the bedroom at 3 in the morning. And everything about the description and what happens, it absolutely matches up with demonic infestation. So it seemed to go from this physical thing prior to, let's say, 1990, to now this spiritual altered state thing. And I absolutely say the altered state abduction with the gray is demonic, has nothing to do with aliens from space. But I do believe that the older cases with the craft that were physical, to me, it seemed like those are real aliens from space. And, you know, I also have another theory with the UFO field. And so, you know, I don't want to say I don't believe in aliens from space, because I do. But I know when you get the altered state thing like happened to me, those are not alien. But, you know, my theory on this whole UFO field, a little bit different. 1936, there was a UFO crash in the Black Forest. You know, it's documented as much as any other UFO crash, right? Story. You know, so 1936, Black Forest, Germany, Hitler comes to power in 1933. He knows about the crash. I believe they recovered a UFO. I think they had no idea what to do with it. You know, how could you back engineer something that, you know, doesn't even have control panels and they don't even know how to get into it, let's say. But it started Hitler along this path of the paranormal, where they were he got involved with the Vril Society. Maria Orsic, who was a medium, she convinced them there was these things come from the hollow earth. There's another Aryan species, and that's where this whole Aryan thing came from with the Nazis, that there's another species in the hollow earth under Antarctica. They use crystals, and they're powerful. They can be used as weapons. And he buys into it. You know, it's really a whole different version of Nazism and Hitler. He was heavily into the occult, the Indiana Jones stuff was real. I'm serious. He actually sent his SS out all over the world to find the Ark of the Covenant, the Spear. Yeah, I mean, that stuff really happened. He did send those people out, and they formed an alliance with Juan Perón in Argentina. They had a base down there in Antarctica, a fallback plan. But my version of it is, you know, he did these experiments with red mercury. They did something where they had a little bit of anti-gravity, but they were in the early stages, just like, you know, they almost had the atomic bomb before us. But one of their scientists deliberately sabotaged the program. Instead of using heavy water, he was using different, you know, let's say regular tap water so that it wouldn't work. But he did it on purpose. He didn't want Hitler to have the bomb because he knew he was just going to kill everybody with it. But so what happens is, you know, Hitler needed about six more months. He had his V-2 rockets, V-7 rockets, jet engines, but they weren't perfected yet. And we beat him. So we get all this information in 1945 with Project Paperclip. And I think we got his Hanabu series, you know, flying saucers. They might have been able to lift off the ground and stuff. They weren't perfected. We got everything from Kamla. He actually left Germany with all of his research. He flew to the United States and he gave it to us in exchange for immunity because he knew Germany was going to lose. So you got 1945, we get everything. I think Roswell was a test flight of what we got from Hitler, and it crashed in Roswell. I really think that was not alien. That was the German technology. And
so you don't believe that they recovered any type of alien bodies at that time?
No, I don't think Roswell was aliens. I think Roswell was our experiment of the Nazi technology, which was based on the 1936 real UFO crash. I think we tested a craft that we had gotten it to fly, and I think that's what crashed in Roswell. I don't think that it was an alien craft. I think it was ours. But it's all based on a real alien crash in 1936 in the Black Forest.
That is very intriguing. All right.
Yeah, and very few people, I might be the only one who has that theory, that this all came from the Black Forest crash, which got Hitler going in that direction. And you could even take it a few steps further, because what happens in the, you know, 1952 is the CIA is formed and they're looking at Aleister Crowley. The FBI was, and then turned it over to the CIA. Aleister Crowley is a self-proclaimed antichrist demon, a cult worshiper. And they were looking at Aleister Crowley because they were afraid of, like, Satanism and, you know, kids that disappear, maybe being sacrificed and stuff like that. So they, and this is something else I only learned about three, four years ago. There was a group that formed in the CIA called the Collins Elite. And you can look it up. They were a branch of the CIA that looked at UFOs and looked at, because the UFOs, there were UFOs over Washington, D.C., and they seemed to be real UFOs. And that's when we created the CIA. It was actually four branches of the government that we created right after that incident in July of 52. So the Collins Elite is looking at UFOs. They're also looking at the occult and the paranormal because of Aleister Crowley. So the Collins Elite is looking at both. Their conclusion is there are no UFOs, that the UFOs are all part of demonology, of the occult and the paranormal, that there's probably dimensions that these things come through, other dimensions, not from space. So you can still say the UFO is real. It just doesn't come from other planets. It comes from Earth, but it's in a different dimension of Earth, and they're able to pass through. So that goes hand in hand with my Hitler theory. And then you find out that they also had, we know what they did, the CIA did MK Ultra with all the LSD and the mind control. And I think that was behind the two Kennedys and Martin Luther King assassination, that was all part of, you know, these people that became shooters, and they were, it was all mind control. But they had another program called Operation Orphan, where they decided that, okay, we know that these dimensions, we know there's the paranormal, we know this whole angel, fallen angel thing is real with real entities. How do we weaponize it? How do we harness the powers of the paranormal, which is really, and this is all true, I'm not making this up, it's like a Faustian agreement to gain power from the devil that we can use as a weapon, you know, and they did remote viewing and things like that. So this is whole other theory that I just told you that has absolutely nothing to do with space.
You're the only one I've ever heard say that they think that the government was actually testing something at Roswell, and that's what it really was. So, all right, my special guest tonight is John Ventry, and we're discussing his career investigating the UFO phenomena, and I will have more for you when we return right after this. We are back, and my special guest tonight is John Ventry, and his website is johnventry.blogspot.com. Now, John, let's talk about Pennsylvania, because something happened there. I mean, it was fourth as far as UFO sightings were concerned. Is it still that way?
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. It was 2008. I had just become the state director in 07, and we get this UFO wave, and I remember it like it was yesterday. What happens is MUFON emails you the cases. It's really in by zip code, you know, they send it to you. So I'm getting cases out of Lake Erie where people are seeing craft that they believe are coming out of Lake Erie. And I remember it was East Lake, Ohio, right by Lake Erie. And then it would be like, hour later, I get another case out of Wheeling, West Virginia, another one out of Pittsburgh, another one out of State College, all describing the same things. And so it seemed like something was coming out of Lake Erie. It was flying south, you know, along the Ohio-Pennsylvania border, and it seemed to then turn east, almost like at the turnpike. It kind of like followed, you know, it's kind of weird. It followed I-79 south and I-76 east to Philadelphia. And there was a ton of cases over in the Philadelphia, Bucks County area. And, you know, we went from, we were getting maybe two cases a week in Pennsylvania for the whole state. So I remember we were getting about 93 for the whole year. And we got 250 cases in like a 2 month period, you know, 10 week period. So we got three times more than a whole year's worth in just a couple of months. And there were some weird cases. You know, there was a guy in Pittsburgh. He was disabled in a wheelchair, but he had a lot of high tech camera equipment. He was taking pictures of some stuff in the sky. And, you know, I had people analyze the photos, and they said that, well, it's just like camera shake. It was a point of light that you know, the camera's not steady. But all of the pictures looked like a solid craft to me, and they all look the same. We had guys in State College, Penn State, seeing the same thing that the guys in East Lake, Ohio were seeing. But the main cases were in Bucks County over by Philadelphia. And there were actually three. And we ended up taking those, and we did the Discovery Channel show, UFOs Over Earth. And the two main cases, Cliff and Denise, I've done that on, I think, five different TV shows. And it ended up landing me on the Anderson Cooper show with The Witness in 2012. A 45-minute interview on Anderson Cooper. I don't know how many other UFO people have been on Anderson Cooper, but I did a 45-minute interview with them. So what the main cases, well, I'll tell you about the lesser case first. It was a couple over by and they were over by a military base, and they said they knew everything that flew. They could name every plane, a Warthog, a C-130. They knew everything. And they said one night they're in their house, they look out, and they see something hovering. And they said it's not a helicopter. It was no noise. And one of them had, or two of them had, like a searchlight that they were looking down, looking for something, searching for something. And it was really close. It wasn't like it was way out in the distance. It was maybe, 50 yards away. And they can see the craft. And it was a husband, wife, and a son. All three of them saw it, and they reported it. That was a lesser case. But the two main cases that came out of this was a woman in Levittown by the name of Denise, and she's the one that did the Anderson Cooper show with me. Four times she saw this, but it's like 3 a.m. The dog starts barking, wakes her up. She lives in an apartment building, and she goes out. She goes outside and she looks in the sky. She sees like a triangular UFO, and it has three lights on it on each of the three corners. And she saw it a couple of times. One of the times, and I think it was May 23rd, end of May, it comes really close and it's hovering over her yard. She can see it. It's right there. And it drops these metallic sprinkles into a tree in her backyard. And she says then it kind of just sucks them back up like a magnet would pull up metal chips, sucks it back up. And so that's how she basically describes it. So what we do is we go there. We take samples from that tree. We take the leaves. We send them for analysis, and we also take leaves from another tree in the yard and a tree in the front and tree around the corner. Now, of course, the tree that she says this happened on, two different labs analyze it, and they come back and they say, one lab says the leaves were subject to high heat or radiation. The leaves had anthocyanin on them, which is a natural enzyme that gets produced when it's put under high heat or radiation. The other lab, it had that on it. I'm trying to think now what the other lab had told us. Some of the leaves had holes in them, and they had started to change their shape to more of a rounded type shape than pointy leaves, and they found boron on the leaves. So I said to them, okay, boron, is that like in pesticides? And they said, no, that's boric acid. They said, this is boron. Boron should not be on the leaves. So when you look up boron, boron is used in nuclear reactors. It's used in paints in nuclear reactors. And boron is used on stealth aircraft because it doesn't reflect radar. Now, how does that get in the tree that she says these metallic probes fell into from a UFO? So there was absolutely something about her case. She didn't make it up. I asked Denise, I said, do you have boron in your spice rack? And she looked at me and she had no idea what I was talking about because she didn't sprinkle boron on the leaves, And we got a real good, 12-page report from the labs on that. And so that was one case. So I would say that was probably the most prominent case because we did five television shows on it and ended up on Anderson Cooper. But the other big case in Bucks County was in Doylestown. And where are you located? Where are you calling from?
I'm actually in Tennessee.
Tennessee. Okay. Well, Doyle, both of these towns are just like 30 miles north of Philadelphia. So the other case is very good, too. I mean, we go to this guy's house. He's a retired contractor. He's probably living in a $3 million home. You know, he's happily retired. And he starts telling us this story. You know, and there's, he's not going to benefit by this. So there's really no reason to make it up. You know, he says, John, I'm in bed sleeping. And he says him and his wife sleep in separate rooms because he snores. So they sleep separately. And he goes, I'm laying in bed. He says, again, this is the same May or a couple of days before or after Denise's sighting. He says, my dog starts barking, wakes me up. It's like, I don't remember the time, 3-4 in the morning, same as Denise, who's probably about 15, 12 miles away. And he says he sees a UFO in the sky, and he says it's moving really, it's huge, and he says it's moving slow. He says the thing's gigantic, like the size of an aircraft carrier, and it's just moving really slow across the sky, and then he says it turns and it veers off towards the northeast. So then it's like a couple of weeks later, it happens again. The dog barks, wakes him up. He sees it. He runs and grabs his wife, and they go outside. So he says there's a heat lightning storm. So when there's flashes of lightning, he says he could see the UFO. It was six-sided, and it, you know, had six sides, and it looked like six triangular craft were docked together. When the lightning went off, he could see through the seams, like he could see where the six were docked together. He could see through it, so it lit it up. And he says that it veered off, like towards New York. So what the investigator did, Bob Gardner, he called the Philly Tower. He got cleared. He went down to the tower, and he told them, and they went and looked on their radar, and they said, yeah, on the day that he said it happened, they said that they had a large object with no transponder come on the screen. It was large, and they said it veered off towards New York. So it matched up with what the guy said. So those are the two best cases I have ever worked on.
Mentioning the boron on the leaves there probably indicates the government. How much involvement do you think they have in this?
Well, you know, we tried to get an interview at the Air Force base there. I can't think of the name of it right now. It starts with Willow Grove. And they denied us an interview. But the funny thing is, years later, I found out about the TR-3B, which is supposed to be the next generation after the stealth fighter. And what do you think it is? It's a triangular craft with three lights on it. It absolutely matched up to what Denise saw. So, you know, at this point, I say to myself, you know, I think the whole thing was a government military project. I'm not so certain that that was extraterrestrial. But at the time, you know, that's what we were believing, that we didn't have that type of technology. But I kind of today say, well, if the TR-3B is true, then that's what they, it certainly is what they described. And I would say that's what it really was.
All right, so let's get back to Pennsylvania. I want to talk about whether or not you came up with any theories as to why the sheer numbers of UFO sightings in that period of time.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. We have a guy here who's actually a law professor, retired attorney, et cetera, and he did an analysis on cases. And he was looking at orange orbs. That was seen. And that's, you know, there's different types of craft. Some are circular, some are triangular, some are, you know, these orange, reddish orbs that are seen. And he came up with a theory based on when they were seen, where they were seen. He actually, MUFON gave him access to their database, and he wrote a book on it. And he said that there is a UFO, there's a, seems to be a base off of California, off of Los Angeles by Catalina Island. There's a base in Lake Erie, and then he says there's a base, two bases in Florida, one off of Miami and one off of Tampa under the ocean. And what our case in 2008, clearly they were coming out of Lake Erie, you know, or at least from Lake Erie, and they were flying, you know, that south, and then they turned east. And I think they just headed out, past Philadelphia. I think they went out into the Atlantic. I think they looped around, maybe by Nova Scotia or somewhere, came back down over, Canada, which at that point is very uninhabited. And I think there's a base in Lake Erie, and that's where they come out of. And this is just the flight pattern. I don't know why, in those couple of months in the summer of 08, there were so many, like I said, there was we had like just out of Bucks County, 150 cases. So all these people can't be hallucinating because they were all separate cases, different people. But the strange thing was, like I said, we were getting 93 cases a year. And over the last 10 years, we averaged after that about 300 cases a year. It tripled what we were getting. And I think it was mainly because we started doing UFO conferences in Pittsburgh, Erie, and Philadelphia, and we made it very comfortable for people to come forward and talk about this, so they knew they weren't going to be made fun of, their identities were kept confidential, and so people now started coming out and reporting their sightings. But, we went from 93 to about 300, and it has stayed there ever since for the last 10 years.
Okay, very good. I want to talk about the USO cases, John, from Russia. How did you come across that information?
Well, you know what I was doing? It's funny. I put this book together, UFOs Over Pennsylvania. And it's like, I'm a very thorough person, and I just can't write a 125-page book. I think we had about 80 pages just on the 2008 UFO wave. So I got this bright idea. And I said, you know what? I'm going to contact big name people in the field and ask them for a favor. Send me a chapter about whatever it is you want to talk about, and I'm going to put it in the book, even though it had nothing to do with Pennsylvania. And Paul Stonehill sent me a chapter on Russian USOs, which is underwater submerged objects. And Carl Find out of Delaware sent me a chapter on American USOs. So there's two chapters in the book having to do with underwater craft, and that was all very interesting.
All right, so let's talk about MUFON. I'm really interested in how they do things. I always assumed that they collected the information so that at some point in time they could prove that people are witnessing these craft, but has their objective changed since they first started this organization, or what are they doing with the information that they collect now?
No, I served 3 years on MUFON's board. I think it was from like 2011 to 2014. I was considered an interim board member, not an official board member, but I went to all the meetings and everything. And MUFON started in 1969, it started in May of 69. And in October of 69, Project Blue Book came to an end. So, I don't think I've ever asked John Schuessler as to, did you start because you knew Blue Book was coming to an end? And I think that's probably what happened, was they started their own civilian UFO group. And there were other groups, APRO and NICAP and others. But that's how MUFON started in 69. Their goal is to, whatever they can find out for the benefit of humanity, that, if they could find out a propulsion system or, cures to diseases, it would be all for the benefit of humanity. So that's pretty much what they do. They went computerized. I think in about 2007 or 8, they computerized all their records because they were all, on paper. And, filed, paper records. And it's funny how when we did the TV show Hangar One, and we had all those boxes of records you had to go through prior to, like, let's say 2008, 2007, everything was on paper. So to find the cases, they actually took that and kind of photoed it and digitized the whole thing. But so MUFON, there's nothing nefarious about them. There's like all these groups that come out and point fingers and say this and say that. And, you know, I was the state director 10 years, multi-state director. I had seven states at one time because I'm a real good manager. I had three states at work at UPS. I ran three states. And so when they gave me seven states for the UFO stuff, I was able to manage that. I don't have a problem multitasking. But, you know, there's nothing, you know, they don't work for the government. You know, it's funny when people say, oh, MUFON's government, they're CIA. I say to them, did you ever watch the Hangar One TV series? I don't think there's ever been a TV series like that where we called the government out on covering this up and saying that they have military bases in space, you know, space weapons and underground military bases. And this was covered up and even, you know, people killed that seemed to be knocked off by the CIA. So I said, how can you say MUFON is government when the whole TV series was calling out the government that this is a cover up? So, yeah, so I mean, that's what MUFON does. And yeah. So is there anything else you want to know about MUFON?
No. That's good. Now, I want to ask you, before we go, how forthcoming are other countries in terms of their UFO investigations?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. You know, Russia has come out a lot. Well, that one guy, Paul Stonehill, who gave me the USO chapter for my book, he's Russian, you know, but he was able to get a lot of cases, a lot of different stories. They opened up their files, and maybe that was 20 years ago. But, you know, you look at China and Japan, they have official UFO reporting centers, government agencies that you could actually go and report your UFO to. It's only the United States and Great Britain, the UK, they investigated UFOs through the military. Now, if you go to South America, they investigated really through the FAA as an air safety issue. So they just don't want a plane hitting a UFO and killing, you know, all the passengers. So they look at it as air safety through their FAA. France is probably the best of all the countries. They have an entire network put together, some civilian, some government, but they too look at it as like air safety. And if something happens, they have a list of companies they're going to call to investigate, to clean up the mess, to do, you know, whatever it might be. But France is absolutely the best, most open country on the UFO question. And that's where Jacques Vallée got involved. Like I said, South America, they look at it as air safety. It's really only the United States and Great Britain that the military investigates it because it's a standing order to shoot one down. We want to get our hands on it. I think it was Truman in 52 who said, shoot it down. And that's a standing order today. But we want to get it to back engineer and create it as a weapon.
All right. Very good. I've really enjoyed this conversation. John, why don't you take a moment to tell my listeners where they can find more information about you, your books, and anything else you're working on?
Yeah, you can just go to johnventry.com. You don't need the blog spot. It's just johnventry.com. And on the site is I've actually sold out on all my printed copies, but all my books are on Kindle, so you can read them there. My books tend to be about 400 pages. I make $2 a book. I'm not going to bother printing them anymore, so they're out of print. But they're all on Kindle. The other thing I'm really proud of is after the Hangar One TV series ended, what we did locally here was film a UFO talk show. It started out as UFOs over Pittsburgh, and then I filmed another. We did 53 episodes, and I filmed 23 more at my house, which is really a cool setting because every room is themed. You know, I have a Egyptian room, I have a sports room, I have a medieval room, a sci-fi room, and there's a link there on my site about two-thirds of the way down for free lectures. Click on that. There's 76 lectures there. I call it, the name of the site is Make Ufology Great Again, but there's 76 lectures, and I'm really proud of those. You know, they're really informative on different topics.
John, have you seen the movie Iron Sky?
Iron Sky. Yeah, I think I did see that one. That's where there's a Nazi base on the moon, and they come. Yeah. Yeah, I was actually hoping for a better movie than that, you know, but, you know, I think there's a little credence to that, possibly, because, like I said, it's real with the Red Mercury and trying to create, you know, they had the Hanabu series that were flying saucers, you know, so, you know, but then, like I found out, though, I would say 90% of everything in this field is made up. It can't all be true because a lot of the theories conflict with other theories. And I think there's a basis of truth in this, like some UFO crashes are real. And, you know, I also proved Kecksburg, that famous crash 7 miles from my house, that it was a U.S. spy satellite that crashed. It was an MK-2 reentry vehicle that crashed in Kecksburg. It was not an alien craft. So, you know, a lot of these get, you know, just embellished and become urgent legends. But some are real, like the 1936 crash. But I would say to people, 90% of everything you hear, whether it's the military, outer space, interdimensional, you know, MK Ultra, 90% of that is made up. You know, you just got to find a way to weed through it and get to the truth.
Right. And I always encourage people to do their own research. John, many blessings to you. And I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for tonight's edition. I want to thank my special guest again, John Venturi, for joining me. Please check out his website, johnventuri.blogspot.com. Don't forget to check him out on Hangar One as well. If you like shows like that, check out John on Hangar One. I know they have it on demand. That's how I've been watching it. If you live in Pennsylvania and you've observed something in this period of time that John's talking about, email me and let me know what you saw, or if you have pictures, let me see those as well. I'm curious to know if anyone has witnessed any of these things firsthand. All right, I want to thank my producer tonight, Kim, and the Mysterious Radio team. I am your host, K-Town. You guys have a great night, and I will see you next time on Mysterious Radio.
Like the show? Get more Mysterious Radio on our website. And don't forget to visit our Twitter and Facebook page.